Welcome to the fifth episode of the World in a Satin Bag podcast. I want to thank the next person to actually donate who brought me over the first milestone, which means everybody is getting a free short story, hopefully within the next week. If not, definitely this month. It'll happen soon, and I will release that I'm going to podcast it. I'm going to release it as an ebook, all of that good stuff. So thank you for donating. I appreciate it. And to everybody who's donated so far. And of course, you remember that there's all this cool stuff that these people are going to get for all of the money they donated. And I really appreciate them donating. So there's that. I'm going to shut up now. And I'm going to get right to chapter 5. Chapter 5, Triska and Things. Inside the healer's shop, James was overcome by a remarkable calm, the weight suddenly gone from his shoulders. Something about the way the bookshelves were laid along the walls and the warm rust-red and earth-brown drapes that hung from the ceiling dissipated his anxiety. It was like being curled up in bed with a hot meal, all his cares little more than a distant memory. He followed P through a wall of drapes into a room covered in pillows and flickering candles. The aroma of ginger replaced the cinnamon and cocoa that had overwhelmed him when he first entered. P motioned him to take a seat, and he did, finding a small cushioned chair nearby. P found a thin, silken pillow on the floor and sat cross-legged on top of it. "Pantiphilus?" a soft female said from behind another wall of brown curtains at the far side of the room. "Is that you?" P simpered. "How did you know it was me, my dear?" "Because whenever you are here, all I can smell is ginger." P snickered. A short, pudgy woman appeared through the curtains. The crown of her head might have reached James's chin. She wore a thick brown dress that fell all the way to her feet, and her face was round and beaming. "Pantiphilus, you old fool, what brings you back here? You've not been cursed by another pixie, have you?" "No midnight wanderings for me this time, Triska. I was fortunate and unfortunate not to meet a single pixie in my travels." Triska nodded. "And who is your guest?" "I found him first. He's mine." P giggled. Triska was not amused. "I'm James." He stepped forward to shake the woman's hand. She took it graciously and bowed her head. He bowed his in turn, remembering P's accusations of rudeness earlier that day. Triska glanced between them. "He's why you've come?" "He may be in need of your considerable skill. You should hear his story. It's quite charming." P produced a smile to accompany his sarcasm. James pursed his lips. Triska's gaze now focused on him. "What story is this?" James turned away, unable to meet her gaze for a moment. Then, as if resolving himself to the inevitable, he told her everything, from Laura's disappearance to meeting P in the field. She said nothing while he told his story, and he could not read her face. Did she believe him, or did she agree with P that he had lost his mind? "That's an interesting story." Her face still betrayed nothing of her inner thoughts. P suppressed a fit of laughter. "It's the truth." P's eyes were on him again, but they were teary and the muscles on his face twitched. At any moment, the tiny man might burst into laughter again. Then, directing himself at Triska, P said, "Do you think you can fix it?" She nodded. "No problem at all. I've treated worse insanities." James's stomach dropped. She agreed with P. He had lost his mind. In that moment, he came to realize that his story would not be well received by anyone on this world. His origins were simply too strange for these people to accept, just as he would not have accepted their existence back home only a few days past. That left but one question on his mind. "What happens if I'm telling the truth?" The bitterness within him rang out in his words, no longer able to contain it. Triska shrugged his question away. "Such things are unheard of, James. Not since before my ancestors have there been people from beyond these lands. But if it's true, then so be it. Healers must fix minds, not break them." She rubbed her hands together. "Shall we begin?" James gave in and leaned back in the chair. The cushions were soft against his back, and he was tired, but he would not sleep. Triska slipped out of the room and returned with a steaming cup. The familiar scent of jasmine lifted his spirits. He took the cup and sipped the liquid. The taste was sweet and spiced. His tongue yearned for more, and he drank heartily. His body warmed as the fluid went down his throat, filling every inch with its intoxicating flavors. Triska reached out and closed his eyes with her fingers. Her touch was comforting and motherly. He let her take his head in her hands, and a flash of sunlight spilled into the darkness between his eyelids. The strange sensation overcame him, like something lurking in the back of his mind, wandering aimlessly along the imaginary paths that connected his memories. Images of his childhood came and went, and more still of his parents at Woodton and school and Laura. The images came in and out of his vision, moved aside or replaced as if by curious hands. Then fiery red light consumed his mind, and he heard the roar from Hanser Manor raging in his mind, echoing and ringing in his ears even as a dim wall of violins appeared to cover the sound. Shadow crept from an invisible point, consuming everything he could see until the shadows became eyelids and opened to become that terrible eye. A bellowing scream forced James to open his eyes. The rush back to reality made him dizzy. He clutched his head to make the throbbing go away, but the screams were still there. Then, at least, the screaming ended, and when he looked up he saw Triska lying on her side and panting. P comforted her, his face worried. Droplets of sweat fell from both their foreheads. "What is it?" P said. "The eye! He's been marked by the eye!" P's face became a wall of fury. His hand rose in a single violent motion in distorted air, waving as if from intense heat. The distortion shoved James hard against the chair, then up into the air. He struggled against his waving, semi-transparent bonds, but his limbs refused to move. "You're a spy from Aintheland." "No! Don't lie to me. Triska's no fool. You've been marked." "The eye took my friend." The bonds squeezed tight. He yelped. "Stop it, P." Triska breathed hard, but she still spoke with authority. "He's not lying. Everything he says is the truth." P's jaw dropped. How was that possible? Very strong and distant magic, ancient even, the last of its kind. Such things were supposed to have been destroyed 2,000 years ago. The two of them watched James as if he were a zoo animal. P released the bonds, letting James drift back to the chair. His heart raced. They finally knew what he felt, the fear and wonder and confusion. "Luthien has your friend," Triska said, collecting herself from the floor. "And he has you marked." I don't understand." P slumped onto his pillow. "Luthien is the ruler of Aintheland. The eye is his eye. He has only one." Triska gulped. "He sacrificed his left eye to see his future with the other. And now, he controls all of Aintheland and much of what used to be a part of the Farthland." Then P and Triska told him about Luthien, how he had raised an army and overthrown the previous ruler of Aintheland over 200 years ago, how he had defeated armies by avoiding death 1,000 times over, securing the future he wanted rather than the future he had seen, and how 3 kingdoms had fallen to Luthien and his army, and 2 others had failed miserably to thwart the incredible power he held. Only the Farthland remained strong enough to repel him beyond the Fire Rim. "What does he want with me and Laura?" "I don't know," Triska said. "Whatever the reason, it can't be good for those of us in the Farthland. Everything that man does leads to destruction." "But we do know that Luthien will be looking for you," P said. "He'll send spies into the Farthland and," the little kind fidgeted, "other things. Shift kind, shapeshifters." Triska shivered. James buried his face in his hands and breathed deep. All of it was too much. The world he had landed in, Luthien and Laura. They were stones falling on him from the sky, great weights that crashed into him and made his shoulders slump. And he had put himself in the middle of it all. He wanted to scream out and release the tension, but he knew it wouldn't help. The smell of ginger disappeared, replaced by an overwhelming scent of dark chocolate. "What am I going to do, P?" The Furl shivered. "I've made a promise to you. I will help you find your friend. Erdwiddle Law says that I must keep that promise, even to the death. We will have to go to Aintheland, across the Fire Rim, and into the heart of Tirlin Pur, where Luthien makes his home. But I have to insist that you reconsider. At least here we can keep you safe." "But I came here to save Laura." Triska leaned forward. "I know, but you can't waltz into Aintheland unimpeded, little one. It's covered in underkind and daemonkind." She indicated the Furl. "Do you even know how to use that?" He shook his head. I can't control it." Triska glanced at P. "Take him to Darl." "The crazy old man on Market Street?" P spat. He turned his whole body towards her, the offense plain on his face. "I can teach him magic without that old sod involved. A touch your daughter's, after all." She giggled. "He's humankind. Can you teach him to use a sword?" "Darl may be crazy, but James will need his discipline and training. Magic will do him no good if he can't defend himself." P grunted. "Curse you and that old fool. We'll go to him in the morning, but I won't promise that I'll enjoy his company or refrain from quips and jibes. We'll find him drunken in a pile of corn husks, I imagine." He paused to catch his breath, his skin flushed. Then, as quickly as it had all began, the little kind changed the subject. "I think it's high time we had some supper. I'm afraid my stomach is unnecessarily empty." Triska and James laughed. The little man rubbed his belly cheerfully. Triska guided them through a sea of curtains into a tiny kitchen. A small wooden table and a black iron stove occupied the center, while the walls were covered with shelves and cabinets full of roots and fruits, and jars of powders and grains of things that James didn't recognize. She rummaged through cabinets, and before long, three steaming plates of melted cheese and crisp bread, fresh berries, and something which resembled chicken was placed before them. James second-guessed the meat for a moment. It was stringy and brown and steaming with the scent of roasted bird. But he was reassured by the others and marveled at the taste as the juices ran down his chin. Before long, they struck up a conversation again. P explained where they were going in the morning, while Triska exclaimed that she would have to go to the High Council, the governing body of Arlen City and most of the Farthland, in the morning. They had to be notified so that the city could prepare for Luthien in the event that he arrived in the Farthland with force or sent his spies and assassins after James. Yet James didn't see the point in it. Having his story spread across the Farthland through whispers and rumors would only hinder his ability to save Laura. But he also understood that those who ruled the Farthland could not remain blind to reality if it meant lives could be saved. Triska assured him that it was necessary, and that only the High Council could properly protect him. He accepted it for what it was. When the meal ended, Triska took away the plates and led them to yet another room where he and P would spend the night. In the center were two plump beds, covered in fine, shining fabric which might have been fit for royalty if James had ever known any. P hopped onto the bed like a child, tossing his cap aside and flicking his hands in the air, which sent shimmers of light up his torso. The light faded, and P, now dressed in white pajamas with green dots, piled pillows into the corner of the right-side bed and dove into them. Triska guided James to the other bed. "I'm afraid I have nothing for you to wear to bed. I have no sons, and have always had a feminine sensibility in this place." James shrugged and told her not to worry. The bed welcomed him like a pair of warped, warm hands, rolling around the frame of his body as he sunk into the center. The fabrics were equally accommodating when he pulled them over him. It wasn't home, but he knew he would sleep well tonight anyway. Triska made to tuck him in, saw that he was well-placed, and gave a playful shake of her head. "We'll start off on the right foot in the morning. Do forgive P for his lack of faith." "I don't blame him," he said quietly, aware that his words might sting P if he wasn't careful. "As well you shouldn't. We little kind aren't always right, just more right than you humans, most of the time." "He's just a silly old Erdluiddle," Triska poked fun. Then she turned to leave. Triska left them in the room with dwindling candles. James watched them flicker, thinking of all the things that had happened to him in the last 2 days, and about the things he would do tomorrow and the day after, training and dealing with the High Council. But most of all, he thought about how he would save Laura now that he had friends, and whether he could justify taking P with him on what was bound to be a dangerous and possibly deadly journey. P's tiny snore broke his concentration, matching the rhythm of the slow decline of the candles in the room. As the candles went out, so too did his eyes, drooping until they eventually closed, leading him to a gentle slumber. James woke more rested than he had ever been, and in silence. Never before had he woken to silence, but somehow he knew it had more to do with whatever magic Triska possessed than with the home's decor. Back home, he would have been woken because of clattering dishes, or his mother calling him down the hall, or his father shaking him awake because he was late for school, but here he woke up in silence. Even the city outside Triska's walls was quiet. Rolling out of bed, he maneuvered his way through the rooms, careful to step lightly so he wouldn't wake P. He wanted to see the sunrise in Arlen City, to watch as the rays glistened in the street and warmed the stone buildings. He admired Triska's decorations as he wound his way through the drapes. He hadn't noticed before the many Celtic designs running along the walls and the sheets. They were hard to see. The never-ending designs were subtle, inlaid into the fabrics in colors a shade or two shy of the places into which they had been sewn. Had the people of this world been in contact with the ancient Celts, or the other way around? Or was there another explanation? James made his way through Triska's home and then stepped out. Clean, cold, and crisp air filled his lungs, and the sun cast long rays through the light fog of the morning, rising up over the tips of the distant mountains beyond the two towers, glistening between them. The two towers cast long shadows down the western slope of Arlen City, bathing long sections of the city in darkness. The fog slithered across the shadow-cast fields. To the south, thin gray rain clouds were forming. For the first time, he saw the numbers cast in iron on the circular walls of the city, and he knew then that the people of Arlen City could tell time by the towers. A rustle of wings abruptly ended his moment of admiration. James watched as the feathered shape of a griffin descended from the shadows over the rise of a building and perched delicately on a stone bench near the center of the court. Though the beast made an effort to quiet its flight, its claws still clacked against the cobblestones. It stared at him with one of its yellow eyes, as if contemplating its prey. He did not look back, heeding P's warning, and watching instead from the corner of his eye. Then the griffin broke the silence and grunted, "You, boy, young humankind, you may look at me." James turned cautiously. "I will not attack you today, not unless you turn out to be an Anktheland spy, or you greatly insult me again." The griffin's voice echoed in the courtyard, but it was also full of air like rustling wings in a cavern. James nodded, but said nothing. "Where is this place that you come from? What do they call it?" His mouth dropped. "Yes, I know of your story." "I come from a world called Earth, in the town of Woodton." "What is this Earth like?" The griffin lay down, crossing its paws under its chin. "It's not as green as this place, but it is still beautiful. We have enormous cities with cars and airplanes and millions of people, but only humans. The elves and little kind are myths and folktales where I come from, and we have no magic." The griffin blinked, but James could not read the expression on its face. "Perhaps one day you will explain your world to me in more detail. I should very much like to know its wonders, but not today." It rose and clicked its claws against the stone. "Tell me, how do you intend to save your friend?" "I'll go to Anktheland and somehow..." The griffin chuckled, a resonating, airy sound that sent his heart reeling. "There is no easy way into Tir Lian Pur, but there are ways into every city. Remember that and you might save your friend." Then it stood and leapt from the bench and took flight. "Beware the eye. Look to the western sunrise." Then the griffin was gone, flying out beyond the towers and off into the clouds. He watched it until it became a speck in the sky. For a while, he was alone, the streets empty so early in the morning. But as the sun rose higher between the two towers, the streets came alive. Men and women in ragged clothes rolled out their carts from dark alleys, and shopkeepers opened their doors for business. Then P appeared beside him, admiring the bustling morning streets and yawning away the remnants of a long sleep. James said nothing for a time, barely aware of the little man. The griffin had said, "Look to the western sunrise," and that seemed to stick with James more than anything else it had said. "But the sun rises in the east. It sets in the west. That doesn't make any sense." He stared up at the two towers, making sure that the sun had in fact risen from their bases. It still shone bright midway up the towers. At last he turned to P. The little kind still wore his pajamas like a hairy-faced child. P beamed. "I'll have you know, James, that while Arlan City is the safest in all of the Farthland, you can still be robbed, maimed, or unfairly beaten in the waking hours of the day. You're going to be somewhat of a celebrity in the eyes of the High Council. I think it best you keep out of trouble." James agreed. He looked up at the sun again. "Where does the sun rise?" P scoffed. "In the east, of course. What sort of ridiculous question is that? You do best to keep that kind of nonsense quiet when you're in the city. The High Council is unstable with disputes and power struggles. We don't need to give them more reason to think you've fallen and hit your head on all the branches of an inauspicious tree." The little man pointed vehemently. "We'll have to get through the basics before we see Darl. Heaven knows what that madman will think of you if you start spouting such nonsense." "I'm sorry." "It's quite all right. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Let's assume for the sake of simplicity that the only things different between our worlds are a few strange names, some unusual creatures, and a little bit of magic." A good-natured smile returned to P's face. "Now, if you'll excuse me, I would like to eat before wandering off to find a very grumpy old man." James gave a weak smile and followed P back into Triska's home. Once again, the scent of cinnamon and cocoa filled his nose, but it soon turned to dark chocolate before, finally, the scent of ginger took over. Alrighty, everyone, that would be the fifth episode. I want to thank you for listening. And, of course, if you would like to donate, become a part of the donation tier, you can get some free stuff, like free books, etc., etc., etc. You can easily do that. You can go to my blog, wisb.blogspot.com, and there's a little chip-in thingy. You just go there, or you can send it straight to my PayPal, which is arconna@yahoo.com. So that's the PayPal address. You can just send it there. Send whatever you feel comfortable with. Everything over a dollar gets some kind of freebie thing. I appreciate all of your support, and thank you for listening.